Hey guys, welcome to the Rundown. I'm Dheeraj Devarajan, and usually I play some intro music right here, but I think it's a bit of a solemn atmosphere right now, especially in the sports world. As most of you might have heard, Tiger Woods has recently gone into a major car accident in Los Angeles. Obviously, Tiger Woods being one of the greatest golf players ever, one of the greatest sportsmen ever, period. So regardless of whether he was a sportsman or not, it's a very sad accident. So prayers up to him from my side and hopefully from everyone that's listening to the show. Let's hope he gets better, because with him, the sports world is better. With that being said, welcome back once again. I'm Dheeraj Devarajan. This is The Rundown. And today's been an interesting week in sports. We've had a lot of discussion take place. A lot of things have happened. So, I mean, for starters, Carson Wentz got traded from the Eagles to the Indianapolis Colts. That was a really big deal because everyone knew that Wentz was going to get traded at some point, but we just didn't know when. But it finally happened. I believe it was last Thursday in the morning. We all got to know that the trade had been agreed. It'll only go through at the beginning of the league year, which is the 17th of March. So the trade happened. The Colts sent a third round pick this year and a conditional second round pick next year. That could turn into a first round pick based on Wentz's level of play and the quantity of time he plays for. They sent that to the Eagles, and in return, the Colts got Carson Wentz. I'll get into that a bit later. It's been an interesting week. We've had a lot of things going on in basketball, especially a lot of interesting games. The Nets are on an absolute tear. The Phoenix Suns are playing really well. The Lakers have lost, I believe it's three games in a row, including a pretty devastating overtime loss yesterday to the Washington Wizards, which I guess it's the result of losing one of your best players in Anthony Davis. It happens, I guess. So the Lakers are on a bit of a bad stretch. The NBA All-Star teams were around and were announced, and boy, there were some surprises. There was one major surprise. I'll get to that later. There were other things that happened, and I'll be getting into that. I wanted to talk about quarterbacks today. I wanted to talk about the quarterbacks that are going to be playing, starting in the NFL next season. So I kind of put together a list, kind of like a quarterback, which quarterback goes where list, I guess. So I'll be talking about the places that already have their quarterback situation settled and the ones that need quarterbacks for the upcoming season and who I predict will be the day one starter in those places. So yeah, let's see how it goes. Let's get started. Okay, so let's talk about the NBA All-Star starters. So the teams were announced at the beginning of last, I believe it was the, I believe it was last Wednesday or Thursday that they were announced. So on the East, you have Bradley Beal, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Joel Embiid. Nothing much to complain there, I guess. I mean, Giannis has been pretty good this season. The Bucks have not been playing well in the last few games. I believe they lost five straight, but you can't really put that down to Giannis. He's been playing quite well. His supporting cast has not quite lived up to the expectations so far. Chris Middleton, I believe, is a very, very good player. He's a good second or third option on a championship team, and quite been playing up to his potential. Jrue Holiday as well, Pat Connaughton, the whole Milwaukee Bucks supporting cast needs to improve that level of play, and I believe they will do so. So I don't think there's much to worry about for the Bucks, but I guess the most like contentious pick in the Eastern Conference was Giannis, but I don't think there's much to argue there either. But when you go to the West, you have in the backcourt Luka Doncic, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, Kawhi Leonard. And this is where my biggest problem is. So, in my opinion, the number one spot in the current MVP race goes to Joel Embiid. And the number two spot goes to a certain point guard in a certain Pacific Northwest city known as Dame Lillard. And I also believe that he's the best point guard in the NBA over the last couple of years. And I know Steph Curry is a great, Steph Curry is a generational player. Like, he changed the game of basketball, and I appreciate that. But something that really matters to me is clutch play. And Dame Lillard is probably a top two, maybe at max three, clutch player in the NBA, if not number one, along with KD, Kyrie, LeBron. I cannot believe he's not starting. I mean, Dame Lillard is probably the most disrespected superstar that we have in the NBA right now. He is averaging 30 points and 8 assists. Those are MVP numbers, by the way. 30 points and 8 assists on a team that whose second and third options are haven't been playing in the recent past. Talking about Yusuf Nurkic, CJ McCollum, those guys haven't even been playing, and they're still the fifth seed in the West. They're 18-12 right now. Obviously, they had a bad loss last night to the Suns, but regardless, Dame Lillard not starting in the All-Star game, in spite of being top three maximum at max, nothing more, top three in the NBA MVP rankings, to me is absolutely flabbergasting. The amount of disrespect this guy receives all over the NBA. It might be the fact that he plays in a small market like Portland. But even then, you see players like Zion Williamson, LaMelo Ball, all get that shine. And those guys aren't half as good as Dame Lillard. And they're really good. They're up-and-coming players. But Dame Lillard is an established superstar who I believe is going to go into the Hall of Fame. And I just can't get around the kind of disrespect the guy receives on a daily, monthly, yearly basis when it comes to all-star teams, all NBA teams, MVP rankings, and just in general. Apart from the players and the coaches, the fans just seem to ignore Dame Lillard. And the ridiculous thing is this all-star team was decided by the fan vote. The fan vote, the player vote, and I believe the media vote. So it's a combination of the three. And the reason Dame Lillard is not starting, and Luka Doncic, who plays for a team that isn't even in a top 10 seed in the Western Conference right now, the Dallas Mavericks, is starting. And obviously, Luka's a great player. He's a young player. He's only in his third year. He has an international fan base, I guess, an international appeal because he is from Slovenia and he's a wonderful player. And I believe he will be the best player in the league one day. But to have him starting above Dame Lillard to me is it's disrespectful. It's ridiculous. I don't want to see this kind of disrespect being shown to a player of his quality ever again. And I just feel really, really bad for Dame Lillard. I don't think he cares. I just think this is going to motivate him even more to push the Portland Trail Blazers into the playoffs and beyond, and hopefully make a big run when McCollum and Nurkic do come back. They have a good team up there in Portland. He is the most unselfish, let's say, a loyal superstar along with Steph Curry. But the thing is, Dame Lillard has never won a championship, but he still remains loyal to the city of Portland. So to not respect him for everything he's done on the court, as well as the sense of loyalty he shows towards the city of Portland, towards his organization, that has made him one of the highest paid players in the NBA, which he absolutely deserves. It's just really sad for me, and I feel for Dame Lillard. He deserves way more respect than he's getting. And on this show, he will get all the respect in the world, and I can guarantee you that because I love Dame Lillard. He's my best. He's my favorite player in the NBA. Who doesn't play for my team, the Boston Celtics, by default? I feel that I'm more inclined to for my favorite player to be a player who plays for my team. But if that wasn't the case, Dame Lillard would be my favorite player in the NBA. He's top two for sure, and he's just amazing. Now, moving on, I want to talk about a couple of teams in the NBA that have really been lighting it up in the last couple of weeks. I think the first team is the Nets. Now, when the James Harden trade was made, I thought it was a really bad trade. I thought that they're mortgaging their entire depth and their bench, as well as their future. They're giving up something like four first-round picks and four first-round pick swaps. So in the future, if they do ever become really bad, say after KD, Kyrie, and Harden are done, 4 or 5 years down the line, Houston owns those pick swaps. So if, for example, the Brooklyn Nets finish 20-62 in 2026, it's not going to be the Brooklyn Nets who have the first round pick, who have the number one pick in the draft. It's going to be the Houston Rockets who might have the number one pick in the draft. So they're really mortgaging their entire future, their depth. And I thought it was a really, really, really bad trade for a player who I thought would not be able to play with two other superstars, especially Kyrie Irving, who's a ball dominant player. KD. Kevin Durant is a unicorn. He doesn't need the ball in his hands. He doesn't need to be a primary ball handler. You just put the guy in the ball's hands, put the ball in the guy's hands. My bad. And he'll give you 30 points of 18 shots. He'll go 12 for 18, 4 for 6 from 3, and 6 of 6, 8 for 8 from the free throw line. And he'll give you like 8 rebounds, 2 blocks, a steal, and 5 assists. He's the most efficient player in the NBA. Kevin Durant doesn't really need the ball, but James Harden and Kyrie do, which is why I thought the trade wouldn't work out. But what we've seen since then is that as an offensive unit, no one has been more lethal than the Brooklyn Nets. And as of right now, if the Brooklyn Nets keep going at the pace that they are going right now, they will be the best offense in NBA history. And they're putting up something like 120 points a game or something, which is, I mean, it's absolutely crazy. It's unbelievable. But another problem I had was their defense, right? Because, well, Kyrie Irving and James Harden are not known for playing lockdown defense, are they? They lost Jared Allen, who's an amazing interior shot blocker. Caris LeVert, who plays really good defense. Spencer Dinwiddie is a really rangy, lengthy guard who's out for the season now. And I thought that defense would be a problem, and it was. They had the worst defense in NBA history. They were giving up a bunch of points a game. I'm pretty sure it was in excess of like 110, 115 points a game. But what's happened in the last few games is they seem to have settled down as a unit. You know, there's more ball sharing going on. Even with Kevin Durant being out, that's giving Kyrie and Harden a chance to kind of mesh, you know, to kind of develop the chemistry. And you've seen Kyrie come out and say to James Harden, James, you are the point guard. I'm the shooting guard. You're the primary ball handler. And that's the kind of team play that and the attitude that I haven't seen from Kyrie Irving in the past that I really respect. I think anybody who knows me quite well will know that I don't like Kyrie Irving very much because I thought that he messed my team, the Boston Celtics. He messed our chances up to win a championship. So I really don't have much affinity for him, but I can't help but respect what he's doing right now because he's getting the job done. He's playing more of an unselfish game. I believe he's still taking a few too many shots. When KD comes back, he'll be taking a few too many shots. KD should be getting more shots again because the more shots KD takes, the more points you get per shot as compared to like almost any other player in the NBA or ever. Because KD is that efficient. KD should be getting more shots. But with that being said, I really appreciate the kind of attitude Kyrie's showing right now. It's pretty admirable. And James Harden is leading the league in assists. I mean, let me just go through the individual stats right now. I mean, Kevin Durant is putting up 29 points, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists a game. Kyrie Irving's 28 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds a game. And Harden's 25 points, 11.5 assists and 8 rebounds a game. I mean, these are absolutely ridiculous. When you have players putting these kinds of numbers, maybe you don't even need bench depth. Maybe this is a team that's going to prove me wrong and prove the kind of general thesis wrong that without role players, without quality role players, you can't win an NBA championship. And yes, the Nets do have Joe Harris, DeAndre Jordan, Landry Shamet, Jeff Green, some decent players. Joe Harris is a very good 3-point shooter, but the rest are all decent players. Maybe this is just something new. This is something we've never seen before. A team without much bench depth going all the way. And I get it that it's early in the season and it's only a small stretch of time for which they've been really good. But I mean, they look really, really dangerous. I mean, they've been going off. They blew out the Lakers without KD. And granted, the Lakers didn't have AD, but still, blowing out the Lakers is not easy. The way that team has been constructed, it's. Well, they were the preseason favorites, not only because they had LeBron and AD, but because of the depth they had. And to go in and beat that team without your best player and without their second best player, I believe, is a, I mean, it's a remarkable achievement. Blew them out away from home. They went 5-0 on their West Coast road trip. And I mean, there was that amazing game against the Phoenix Suns where they came back from like 24 points down. James Harden hit the game winner. There's really things are not looking good for the rest of the NBA right now. Let's just put it that way because the Brooklyn Nets are, I mean, they're going off. They look amazing right now. So that's the Nets. And the other team I wanted to talk about that's been doing really well is a team that's gone out of the radar. They made a big offseason trade for a top, in my opinion, one of the top 5 point guards of all time in Chris Paul. And that team is the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns have won 9 of their last 10 games. They're 20-10, I believe. They're fourth in the Western Conference right now. They also hold the fourth best record in the NBA, which is pretty funny to me. That all the four best records in the NBA are all the top 4 seeds of the Western Conference. Shows you the strength of that conference. And I mean, they've been playing really well. Again, this is a team that has two legitimate superstars. I mean, Devin Booker is just incredible. I mean, the guy's probably, and I'm hesitating before saying this because this is a very big praise to give. He's probably the closest thing we have to a player like Kobe Bryant in our league today, because of his kind of fearlessness. I mean, the guy was on his own for 5 to 6 years on a really bad team, and people were still able to kind of remark at his incredible ability to score the ball, put the ball in the net, his confidence to take clutch shots. I mean, everyone remembers the shot he hit over both Kawhi and Paul George in the bubble last season. It was incredible. The guy's incredible. He's a great player. He might be the closest thing we have to Kobe Bryant in the league today. And I know that's high praise, but that is what I believe. He's shooting he's scoring 25 points a game on 50% shooting, which is pretty astounding. I mean, it's really, really good. So Devin Booker is, I mean, he's on a trajectory that might end up in Springfield, Massachusetts in the Hall of Fame. And then we have another player whose career is guaranteed to end up in Springfield, Mass, in the Hall of Fame, by the name of Chris Paul. Now, I just want to talk about Chris Paul for a bit, because he's one of the most, again, he's not as disrespected as Dame Lillard, but I believe he's so underappreciated. Chris Paul is undoubtedly a top 5 point guard of all time. I mean, the guy is just incredible. He barely turns the ball over. He's a floor general extraordinaire. One of the best defensive guards in the league throughout his career. He should have won a ring with the Clippers, but he couldn't because his team was getting unlucky with injuries every season. Before that, he should have been traded to the Lakers and gotten a chance to play with Kobe Bryant. But, you know, the league, David Stern, then commissioner of the league, blocked that move. But this might be kind of his reclamation project, you know, maybe with the Suns, who haven't been great, but they do have that Kobe Bryant-like player in Devin Booker. This is kind of like a remake. This is what could have been, and we're seeing it unfold in front of our eyes, and it's just incredible. Chris Paul is what has been in the league for like 60, this is 16th year in the league, I believe, and the guy is just, I mean, I can't help but like remark at his incredible basketball IQ, his incredible ability to protect the ball, and yeah, he's 6'1". He's six. He's not remarkably tall, but that doesn't stop him from being one of the most feisty defenders in the NBA. One of the top, I'd say, he's easily a top 5 defender at the point guard position, and his offensive capabilities are well known. One of the best mid-range players in the NBA. He's a very good 3-point shooter, very efficient shooter. Can take the ball to the rim, and his passing ability as well. I don't need to speak much on that. It's unmatched by almost anyone except maybe LeBron James. And yeah, I can't stop gushing over Chris Paul. I just love the guy. I think he's so underappreciated. He will be a Hall of Famer, first ballot for sure. And all he's doing right now is enhancing his legacy, and I hope he does have the chance to win a ring with Phoenix in the next couple of years. And the third player is DeAndre Ayton. Now, I will go to my grave saying that DeAndre Ayton was the wrong pick at number one in the 2018 draft when you did have Luka Doncic and Trae Young. But at this point in time, the pick looks real good. I mean, the guy is, he's a defensive monster, let's be honest. He's an interior force. He is incredible at blocking shots and intimidating players who are coming into the lane and trying to there are no easy layups around DeAndre Ayton. Let's just put it like that. And he's averaging 14 points and 12 rebounds. Short is, I guess the number of points he scores could go up by maybe if he could average maybe 18 to 19 points a game and remain at the same 12 rebound threshold that he's at right now. He could, I mean, the Phoenix could be a legitimate championship contender, but he's still doing an incredible job. And I think it's his defensive presence that's really remarkable. He's doing an excellent job protecting the rim. And the Phoenix Suns as a whole, they're coached by Monty Williams. And this is kind of, I guess, you see in the NFL is so reluctant, not just reluctant, there just aren't enough black coaches in the NFL, let me be honest. A lot of great black coaches are not being hired in the NFL, and I find it completely ridiculous. Again, I keep bringing up the example of Jim Caldwell. Jim Caldwell averaged, I mean, he went 9-7 twice, 11-5 once in 4 seasons with the Detroit Lions. I mean, the Detroit Lions, but okay, let me get back to my point. This is kind of an example that the NFL needs to take. They need to take this example from the NBA. Look at the results the black coaches are producing. Stop limiting the talent pool that you can pick from. Sure, I mean, your accomplishments need to be the first thing you look at, but don't exclude, I mean, a coach or a certain a coach just because they're from a certain background. I believe that's an absolutely asinine thing to do. You're not just being discriminatory. You're also limiting your opportunity to profit. To help your organization grow, win a championship. And the NFL needs to take this example from the NBA, because if you look at Monty Williams, who was hired last year as the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, he's been doing an incredible job. I mean, the Suns almost made the playoffs last year without, I mean, with a pretty sub-average team. And this offseason, they went out and proved, traded for Chris Paul, Devin Booker got better, DeAndre Ayton got better. They have a good supporting cast. Mikal Bridges is a good player, up and coming. And see what happens when you stop limiting your talent pool and actually pick a coach that is capable. That's what's happening right now with Monty Williams. He's a great coach, one of the best coaches in the NBA. He's been doing an incredible job, and the Phoenix Suns are on a tear, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them being a contender in the playoffs, because they are very, very, very good. Okay, so that's NBA talk done. Now I want to talk about the NFL. So we'll get to Wentz in a bit. I first want to talk about something that we all saw on the internet. So there was this, so Cam Newton, obviously quarterback, former quarterback of the Panthers and the Patriots, former league MVP, Heisman Trophy winner, two-time national championship winner, played in a Super Bowl, one of the most number one pick in the 2011 draft, one of the most electrifying players we've seen in NFL history, maybe the most electrifying until we saw Lamar Jackson. So he was over the, I think something, a video came out over the weekend. He was hosting this camp for a bunch of kids, and this one kid was disrespecting him, saying that, oh, you're so trash, this, that, and the other. And first of all, let me say this. I mean, the guy probably got what he wished for, and what he was wishing for was his 5 minutes of fame, 5 seconds of fame, oh my God, savage, blah, 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 whatever, like. Good for him. He probably got what he wanted. He came out and apologized later. Good for him. I hope he's learned from his mistake, but that's clearly not what you do. There's a guy who's made over $100 million in his career, coming out, hosting a camp to help you out, to help the kids out to become better football players. And this kid was just disrespectful, for no apparent reason. I mean, Cam didn't like say anything to him. He was simply walking past, and this kid, unprovoked, came out and said something completely unnecessary. And later, another video came out of Cam having a conversation with this kid, which shows that, you know, Cam, there was this kind of, I guess, view in the media of Cam being this really abrasive character. Everyone remembers his post-game press conference after the Super Bowl. He's made some bad remarks, I guess, towards female reporters. Something undermining their ability to talk about football, which is obviously uncalled for, I guess. But I guess this is kind of a sign that he's improving, he's changing, he's not as volatile anymore. You saw him becoming such a great leader with the Patriots. You see Bill Belichick, who's so hesitant to praise players, was so vehemently praising Cam Newton's leadership abilities, in spite of Cam not throwing the ball well last season. And the Patriots only finishing 7-9. I think it's the first losing season in like 20 years. You saw the kind of leadership the guy possessed. It was a really tough season for him. He had COVID, obviously. He's coming off a horrible shoulder injury with a new throwing form, and he handled it really well. So for this kid to come out and say stuff like that to him was completely uncalled for. But I want to talk about Cam for a bit. I want to talk about Cam and Bill Belichick. Because there's been this narrative that Cam cannot play in the NFL anymore because he cannot throw. And he had 8 touchdowns and 10 interceptions this year, 8 passing touchdowns. Now, this is something I believe it's a misguided way that we look at stats. Now, you think about a quarterback like, say, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or, I don't know, Drew Brees or Matt Stafford. Quarterbacks who are primarily passers, like obviously Aaron Rodgers has incredible mobility and athletic ability, best quarterback of all time, reiterating that. But when you look at quarterbacks like that, you think about their passing first, and therefore when you look at the stats, you're looking at their passing stats. Aaron Rodgers had 48 passing touchdowns and 5 interceptions, which is a fair representation of the season he had. He was amazing. You look at Tom Brady, 40 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, played really well, threw more touchdowns than he has in a very, very long time. Drew Brees had 24 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. Well, the stats look good, but the guy couldn't throw a ball past like 5 yards with any zip on the ball, any zip on the ball whatsoever. So there's a really misguided way that we look at stats. You know, we need to be able to consider what we see on tape, what we see while watching film, while also looking at the stats. And this is the thing about Cam Newton. Cam Newton is not a pocket passing quarterback. He did have his highest completion percentage in a long time. He completed like 67% of his passes, but his passing stats weren't great. I think he threw like 2,600 yards, 8 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, which looked terrible. But what you have to consider is the guy came off a shoulder surgery. But he missed 14 games of last season. He came off, I believe he had a leg injury as well. Had to get surgery on his shoulder and his leg, excuse me. And coming off of all of that, he had 12 rushing touchdowns, which no one talks about. 12 rushing touchdowns, only one fumble. So if you look at it as a whole, he had 20 touchdowns and 11 turnovers, which isn't bad. I mean, it's not great, it isn't bad. The Patriots did finish 7-9. But if you look at what is around Cam, he had a good offensive line. But apart from that, there was really no weapons of any note on the New England Patriots offense. I mean, Jacoby Myers was the number one receiver. And they had practical no-names playing at every other skill position. I mean, N'Keal Harry is one of the biggest busts of the 2019 draft. I stand up and say it right now. I hope he plays well in the future because I love Bill Belichick. I want Bill Belichick to win. I'll get to Belichick in a second. But, I mean, they picked him over DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, Terry McLaurin. I mean, some really great, great, great players. So, well, they're suffering for that. And kind of blaming Cam for his inability to make Jacoby Myers and N'Keal Harry and Gunnar Olszewski, who's a punt returner undrafted, to turn them into Randy Moss and Deion Branch and Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski is really not fair. And Cam Newton definitely deserves a job in the NFL next season as a starter. I don't know. I believe he will. I'll get to that in a second. I have a thought about it. Like, I have a guess. I'll get to that in a second. But I do believe that there's a really misguided way that we look at stats that makes us believe that Cam Newton doesn't deserve to be a starting quarterback at the NFL anymore. And that's not true. Now, talking about the New England Patriots, let's stay in the same vein. Let's talk about their coach, Bill Belichick. I think, as I've said this many a time, what you see as the facade on Bill Belichick is not the person who he really is. And you heard, like, for example, again, I go back to Cam Newton, who came out in an interview this past weekend, and came out and said Bill Belichick is dope. Like, he's amazing. Like, he's a great guy. He completely gets it. The guy understands football on a completely different level to any other coach. And I'm inclined to completely agree with that, you know. And this whole kind of thing, is it Brady or is it Belichick? Who is more responsible for the Patriots dynasty is one of the most ridiculous questions I've ever heard being talked about in sports media or in general. Because there is no Patriot dynasty without Bill Belichick or without Tom Brady. And they have equal culpability. Both of them are equally responsible for that dynasty. Early on, it was more Belichick because the Patriots' defense was incredible. You had players like Lloyd Malloy, Ty Law, Mike Vrabel, Teddy Bruschi. I mean, you had these great players on defense that Belichick drafted and developed. And they won 3 championships in Brady's first 5 years of starting, where Brady really wasn't an elite quarterback. I think the most touchdowns, he didn't even throw, I think, more than 30 touchdowns in his first 5 seasons. The Patriots relied on their defense and strong run game and Brady being a game manager to win championships. And that obviously falls more on Bill Belichick's feet. But then you look at the next 10 years, that's where Brady kind of elevated and became this elite quarterback. He won 3 MVP, 2007 and 2010. 2017, let's be honest, should have gone to Carson Wentz, but Wentz got injured. So Brady got the MVP. I mean, regardless, that was his MVP. That's where he kind of elevated into this MVP quarterback, throwing for more than 5,000 yards, throwing 50 touchdowns in a season, playing with Randy Moss, leading the most explosive offense in NFL history. But that period of time where Brady was at his peak, the Patriots never won a Super Bowl. They never won a Super Bowl. From 2005 to 2013, they didn't win a Super Bowl. But then, and the Patriots' defense was always great, but it wasn't as good as it was in the early years. But then, as the Patriots' defense was kind of reformed, you had players in the last 5 or 6 years, Stephon Gilmore, Dante Hightower, Rob Ninkovich. You have these great players. On defense, as well as Bill Belichick calling plays, Matt Patricia, Brian Flores. You had these great defensive play callers as well, which is where the dynasty kind of reemerged. So, The way we need to think about it is Belichick, Brady, both equally caliber. Brady's the greatest football player of all time. Not the best. Again, I reiterate, he's the greatest, most accomplished football player of all time. Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time because, again, he's the most accomplished and he has kind of brung out the most in like from, let's say, players who might be less skilled, which kind of reflect on his, I guess, his ability as a general manager, which might not be great. I think that might need to be reevaluated in the Patriots organization looking forward. But this kind of view that the Patriot way, which is a ridiculous term, first of all. I mean, everybody's like, oh, the Patriot way is this, the Patriot way is that. No, it's just football. Like, there's a good culture in the organization. There's a way they go about things. They do their jobs, and that is why they win. That is why they have won so much. That is why they are the winningest franchise in the last 2 decades. They won the most Super Bowls. They won the most games. They go 14-2 or 13-3 with the playoff by practically every season until last season. So, and kind of using last season as this kind of demarcation to kind of show this demarcation between Brady and Belichick is wrong, because Brady had so much on his side. I mean, he had a great defense, amazing offensive weapons, a good, like, great coaching staff. Everything was going in his way, in his direction. While the Patriots were still recovering from the salary cap hits, the debt cap hits that had kind of been affecting them over the last 10, 15 years, helped them win the Super Bowl, but had all come upon them in their last year. They weren't a bunch of players held out. Patrick Chung, Dante Hightower, important defensive players held out from playing last season. So to kind of call the person I consider to be the greatest coach of all time, the winningest coach of all time in terms of Super Bowls, a fraud who won because of Brady, is it's ridiculous. It irks me, is what I'd say. So that's enough about Belichick and Cam Newton and the Patriots in general. Let's talk about quarterbacks. So we saw Carson Wentz being traded from the Eagles to the Colts. And the first thought in my mind is the Colts are going to be Super Bowl contenders next season, because as bad as Carson Wentz played last season, he had nothing going for him. I mean, his weapons were terrible. The Eagles organization really needs to be taken a hard look at. Howie Roseman needs to be fired. He needs to be canned. The fact that you picked Jalen Reagor and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in consecutive drafts over Justin Jefferson, DK Metcalf, and A.J. Brown, to me, is a fireable offense. I mean, the guy, Jalen Reagor might turn out to be a really good player next season. Let's see. Probably with Jalen Hurst starting a quarterback, but Howie Roseman needs to be taken a long, hard look at by the owners of the organization. Jeffrey Lurie needs to take a hard, longer look at Howie Roseman. The offensive line was completely banged up last season. The defense played quite well, actually. I mean, they were pretty good. But to kind of put it all on the shoulders of Carson Wentz isn't fair, in my opinion. It was something that I was doing at the beginning of the season, but I kind of, as time went on, I realized that, you know, it isn't really all his fault. He had no time in the pocket, and sure, his mechanics were kind of off. He tended to get outside of the pocket sometimes when he didn't need to, because his way of gauging whether the pressure was coming or not was kind of misinformed because of how much pressure he was under. Many times he just tended to roll right or left most of the time, regardless of whether the pressure was coming or not. He lacked accuracy. As we know, he's such a tough player. But I believe with this trade and with him being reunited with Frank Reich and playing for the Indianapolis Colts specifically, who have an amazing defense, first of all, and on the offensive side, they have a top four offensive line, in my opinion, the Packers, the Browns, and maybe, I guess, top three, maybe, I guess, Packers and Browns are the only two things I can think of right now that have better offensive lines than the Colts. And having a great defense, having good running game, Jonathan Taylor was an absolute stud. I believe he was top five in rushing yards last season as a rookie, which is really, really good. I think Carson Wentz is going to be reborn. What we saw in the 2017 season, I don't believe was a fluke, because he was incredible that season. He looked like what Patrick Mahomes looked like in his first season. Think about that. That was what Carson Wentz looked like. I mean, the guy could throw from any arm angle, rolling right, rolling left, back foot, front foot, out of balance, in balance. He could throw from any platform. He was just an incredible thrower of the football. Very tough. He could escape from pressure. And I think the trade is really going to benefit both him and the Indianapolis Colts. I think they're really going to be a contender for the AFC. to win the AFC next season and go to the Super Bowl. But the Wentz trade got me thinking about, quarterbacks. The most important position in the NFL, by far, probably in all of professional sports, no sport relies upon one position more than the NFL team or the American football team relies upon its quarterback, which is why I decided to do something. So let's play which quarterback plays where. So there are a bunch of teams who I think are kind of solidified at the quarterback position. Totally, I think it's like it's more than half. I'd say you look at the AFC North, for example. Pittsburgh, I think Big Ben Roethlisberger is coming back, so they're solidified at the quarterback position. They have Dwayne Haskins in the waiting. If Ben doesn't come back, which is not the news that we have right now, then things might change. But as of right now, I think Ben's coming back. Cincinnati has Joe Burrow, who's a stud. He's coming back. Baker Mayfield played really well last season. I think he's only going to take a step up, both in terms of his leadership and his play. Cleveland is going to be really good at the quarterback position, and Baltimore has the most electrifying player in the NFL, and my second favorite player in the NFL, Lamar Jackson. I think the AFC North is set at quarterback. You look at the NFC North now. Okay, so Green Bay, there was some talk about Aaron Rodgers maybe wanting to leave Green Bay, like what's going to happen, but that's clearly not happening. Thank God. I'd like to have the best quarterback in the NFL, in my opinion, play on my team. So Aaron Rodgers is staying at Green Bay. That was a bit tongue-in-cheek, I guess. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes is really good. I'm kidding. Calm down. So Aaron Rodgers is staying in Green Bay. Kirk Cousins played really, really well last season. He had 35 touchdowns, 13 picks, I believe. Had a pass rating of 105. The offense for the Vikings was not that issue. I mean, the defense was just horrific last season. It was really, really, really bad. They had a bunch of injuries. Danielle Hunter, Brandon Williams, Eric Kendricks. A bunch of their star players didn't play. So I believe the Vikings will be good. At quarterback, I think they'll be okay. Detroit, I don't think this is the season they pick a quarterback in the first round. I think they have bigger needs. I think they pick a linebacker, or maybe a linebacker, or maybe a defensive lineman, because I think that's kind of the areas. Those are the areas in which they need to improve before going quarterback. They have Jared Goff right now from the trade with Stafford, so I don't think that they will be dealing in the quarterback market this season. I think they'll be going with Goff. And then I come to our hometown, Chicago Bears. Not a team that I want to do well, but regardless, a team that I'd like to see do well, because I want there to be some competition, some happiness in the city of Chicago. And as I sit here, I have in front of me a Mitch Trubisky jersey that I bought for $10 a couple of days ago as a joke, a gift for my friend. Shout out to Adweta. And that was kind of like the culmination. That was kind of the final straw that made me believe that Mitch Trubisky is not believed in by the people of Chicago, by the city of Chicago, by the general manager of the Bears, by the coach of the Bears, by the players of the Bears. Mitch Trubisky is coming back to play quarterback for the Bears, which is tragic because I don't think he had as bad of a season as people made him out to have. He had 16 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. He was okay. He gets a lot of grief because the Bears picked him over Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson is another interesting situation. I'll get to that. So I don't think he gets a fair shake from the organization or from the people of Chicago or NFL fans in general. But he's been okay. But I do not think that he will be coming back as a starting quarterback at the NFL this year. I think he'll be a backup for a couple of years. Maybe go down to. I don't know, maybe go on to New Orleans and maybe fight for a starting position there. I'm not sure. Let's see what happens. Maybe Philadelphia. Like I don't know what's gonna happen with Mitch Trubisky, but I don't think that he's going to be starting in the NFL next season. I think the Bears have kind of jumped the gun. I don't think they're gonna be getting Deshaun Watson. I think the Bears are probably going to have Nick Foles playing quarterback next season. But if they improve their offensive line, I think they could still make the playoffs because they have an excellent defense as usual. I think Allen Robinson, that whole thing is a mess. The whole situation is a mess. I mean, Allen Robinson is one of the best receivers in the NFL who's never had a competent quarterback and still puts up excellent numbers every year. I mean, he's had Mitch Trubisky, he was okay. But, I mean, he had Blake Bortles before that. I mean, come on. So I think Nick Foles will be the starting quarterback for the Bears next season. Hopefully they bring Allen Robinson back. Let's see if that happens. They might need to go out and draft a weapon or two. Maybe try to sign J.J. Watt. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope J.J. Watt signs with the Packers, but let's see. But I think Nick Foles starts with the Bears. So that's the NFC North. So now let's go to the AFC East. So Buffalo has Josh Allen, who was number two in the MVP rankings last season. He was incredible. There's not much to say about him. I mean, the guy's really good. He's locked in. But I think this is probably the most interesting division when it comes to quarterback movement. Because you look at the other three teams, New England, Miami, and the Jets. You don't know who's going to be starting for them. But let me give you my opinion. I think Miami needs to stick with Tua. There are a lot of misgivings about Tua Tagovailoa. I don't think there should be. I think he's a very good quarterback. Every quarterback struggles a bit in their rookie season. They don't play as well as they possibly could. But I think with a full off season, with some receivers, I mean, the Dolphins need to go out and get some weapons for Tua. They have a good tight end, but they need to get a receiver and some offensive line help in the first few rounds because they have a great defense. I don't think they need to really. They might need to bolster the defense a little bit, but not much. I think they need to go out and improve their skill positions and their offensive line. And I think Tua will be really good next season. I don't think you need to draft another quarterback. I think a lot of the misgivings about Tua are unnecessary. I think Tua Tagovailoa deserves to be and will be the starting quarterback for the Dolphins next season. I think New England drafts Mac Jones. Now, right now, New England's picking 15th in the draft, I believe. So I think there are four teams that are going to pick a quarterback before New England. I think the first team is Jacksonville, who's going to pick Trevor Lawrence. I think we're fairly certain of that. I think Atlanta is going to pick their successor to Matt Ryan, although I think Matt Ryan will start this season and maybe even next season, but after that, I think they'll move on. I think Carolina, right now, the pick that is held by Carolina will be a quarterback. I'll get to that in a second. I don't think Carolina is going to be making that pick. And I think Denver needs a quarterback. And I think the fifth team that's going to need a quarterback is the New England Patriots at number 15. I think they should pick Mac Jones. I think Mac Jones should be the starter. He's that kind of good pocket passer they need. There are a lot of doubts about him, you can't blame a guy for playing with great weapons. Like Tom Brady, I mean, it's not his fault that there are great weapons around him. So you can't blame him for having great weapons. I mean, maybe you can take it a little away from his play, but not much. I mean, he made those weapons. He ensured that those weapons played well. And it's the same thing Mac Jones did. He was really good in college. Devontae Smith won the Heisman. And he was a major part of that, obviously, because he was the one delivering the ball to Devontae Smith. His ball placement is excellent. I mean, the guy, he might not, he's not the best, he's not really mobile. He's not the best mover. Like, he can't run around and make plays. But inside the pocket, I think he's really good. And the Patriots always have a great offensive line. So I don't think that should be a major problem. I think the Patriots picked Mac Jones. And now come the Jets. Now, the Jets have the number two pick in the draft, and many people are saying that they're going to go ahead and select Zach Wilson. I do not think so. I don't think the Jets take Zach Wilson. I think they stick with Sam Darnold. I mean, Sam Darnold has been in one of the worst situations a quarterback could be in his life. I mean, he's had Adam freaking Gase as his quarterback guru, as his quarterback whisperer for the last couple of seasons. He's had. I mean, the defenses have been terrible. His offensive line has not been good. I mean, they drafted Mekhi Becton last season, who's really good. He's an absolute beast. The running game hasn't been great. Le'Veon Bell has not played well. The receivers haven't been great. They lost Robbie Anderson in free agency. The defense has been bad, as I said. I think he's been in one of the worst situations with a coach like Adam Gase for the last 2 years. I don't think you can blame him for how bad he's played. 95% of the quarterbacks would play bad in that situation. I think maybe you have maybe two or three quarterbacks who could overcome anything. Maybe Rodgers, Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. That's about it, in my opinion. I don't think any other quarterback could actually succeed in those conditions. And Sam Darnold, I think, is a good NFL starter when he has the right pieces around him. The Jets can go big in free agency this time. They have two first-round picks. I think they need to spend that on the offense. Well, they need to spend the first pick they have on getting him a number one receiver. Or like a Devontae Smith, a Jamar Chase, a player like that, and they need to get some offensive line help. Or even on picking Penei Sewell with the number two pick would not be a bad choice. So I believe they stick with Sam Darnold. They have other phases of the team that they need to improve. I believe Sam Darnold is still a good quarterback. He might be a little turnover prone, but with some good coaching, I mean, Mike LaFleur is now the offensive coordinator of the Jets, brother of Matt LaFleur. head coach of the Packers, and their offensive system is so quarterback friendly. I mean, there's always a short outlet, a lot of short passes to running backs, basically a lot of receivers just turn out to be open. That's what happens in that West Coast system that's run by Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, players like that. It's just really quarterback friendly. I believe Sam Darnold will be really good next season, as long as he's given the chance. So that's the AFC East. Now let's talk about the NFC East. I think three of the best settled quarterback situation. I mean, the Cowboys are really messing things up with Dak Prescott. They might lose him next season, but I think they'll keep him. They won't lose him this season. So I think he'll be the quarterback for the Cowboys. But they better extend him. I mean, the guy deserves to be paid. He is, without him, the Cowboys really stunk it up. I mean, they stunk up the joint. They finished like 6-10. Could have been even worse if not for some legendary blown leads by the Atlanta Falcons, as usual. Dak Prescott is an excellent quarterback. He's a top-10 quarterback. He needs to be re-signed. He's not giving you any indication that he's going to be injured long-term, except for this freak injury that happened last season. It wasn't even like it was some kind of hamstring or stuff like that. He had his ankle was dislocated. His foot was dislocated. It's not like a frequent injury. It's a rare injury. And I believe he will come back from it. He will be really good, as he was before that, and he needs to get paid by the Cowboys, or the Cowboys will be missing out on having a really good quarterback for the next 10 years. They might be just missing out, and I don't understand why they haven't already re-signed him. It makes no sense to me. So after that, Philadelphia, I think they stick with Jalen Hurts. Now, they've said that there could be some quarterback competition. I believe Mitch Trubisky might end up there in a quarterback competition. Maybe Cam Newton, I don't know. But I think Jalen Hurts played quite well when he was given a chance, both running and throwing the football. I believe there is still something left to be desired in terms of the way he reads defenses, but that is the case for most rookie quarterbacks. I think he'll get better. I think Jalen Hurts will be the starter. The Giants are in this tough situation. But see, Daniel Jones has shown flashes of him, of his ability. I mean, again, the guy, he's really, really fast. He's an athletic freak. He's a very, very mobile quarterback. He's really fast. And I think if the Giants are able to kind of utilize that section of his game more, and they need to fire Jason Garrett and someone from that Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, Sean McVay system, maybe think about bringing in Nathaniel Hackett from the Packers, the Packers offensive coordinator, as their offensive coordinator, because he doesn't call plays in Green Bay. He could call plays in Giants. That could be his next step to becoming a head coach. And he could run that same system that Matt LaFleur ran. I think that could help Daniel Jones. But he's kind of an inaccurate quarterback. He's never really had great weapons. I mean, Sterling Shepard, Darius Slayton, Saquon Barkley's been injured for a majority of the time. So I'd like to see Daniel Jones one more season before making a final judgment on him, because I think he deserves a chance with the entirety of his weapons with Saquon Barkley back. And I think the Giants also drafted a receiver in the first round. I think they get someone like Jalen Waddle or Kadarius Toney maybe in the first round. And these kind of athletic freaks like who are just really, really fast. I think they'd be great weapons for him. They can stretch the field, and Daniel Jones will have the opportunity to kind of show us whether he is the truth or not. So I think he deserves another season. So now let's go to the AFC West. I mean, the Chargers have Justin Herbert. I mean, there's nothing much left to be said. I think he might be in the MVP conversation next season. Let's see. The Chiefs, okay, let's move on. I mean, they have Mahomes, nothing much to say. Oakland has Derek Carr. So here's the thing about Derek Carr. I think he's really underrated. Not as underrated as Dame Lillard is, but he's still really underrated. I think a team can win a Super Bowl with Derek Carr, especially this Oakland team. I think even without maybe excellent weapons, he still had good weapons like Darren Waller, Henry Ruggs, Nelson Aguilar, and some weapons like that. I think the guy can lead a team to the Super Bowl, given the chance. He can read a defense really well. He plays well in Gruden's system. And I think he gets a lot of unnecessary hate and slander from Gruden himself and from Raiders fans sometimes. So I think Derek Carr is a very good quarterback. I think he'll be back. The Raiders need to improve their defense. Their defense stank in the last part of the season. That's why they missed the playoffs. If they improve their season, I think they have a chance to make the playoffs. The Broncos have never gotten the quarterback position right in the last 20 years since John Elway retired, except for having Peyton Manning for four seasons. Apart from that, they've never gotten the quarterback position right. You had Jay Cutler for a couple of years, Chicago legend, but then he was traded for Kyle Orton, another Chicago legend. And then, they had Paxton Lynch, they have Drew Lock right now, they had Trevor Siemian, they had Brock Osweiler. They had this kind of these weird quarterbacks, I mean, who never really turned out to play well. John Elway's ability to evaluate quarterback play has shown to it's been very deficient. And now he's moved up high, like he's in more of an executive role rather than a scouting GM role. I think the new GM comes in and picks a quarterback in the first round. Denver has the number 9 pick. I think they will be picking the fourth quarterback in the draft. I believe that will be either Trey Lance or Justin Fields, whichever one's available, they pick him. And I think Denver will, this might be the situation, this might be the time they get lucky, where they pick the right quarterback, because this quarterback class is uniquely gifted athletically, apart from Mac Jones. But if they can kind of just like help them out, I mean, Denver has this multitude of weapons. I mean, Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler, they have a really good defense, Noah Fant is a tight end, good offensive line. They have everything in place except the quarterback. So once they get the quarterback position right, they could be good for a really long time in a very tough position, a really tough division. That's a given. But I think they could still be really good if they get the quarterback position right. I think they pick a quarterback. Maybe he doesn't start. I think maybe you bring in a veteran to start, like Ryan Fitzpatrick for a season as kind of like a bridge quarterback. But I still think that they pick a quarterback in the first round. Now, NFC West, I think that this is the division that's completely settled, like the AFC North. Seattle have Russell Wilson. They're not trading him. In spite of like everything you heard, they're not going to trade him. I think they give him more power in the organization, improve their offensive line, improve their running game. Their defense played really well at the end of last season. Russell Wilson's a really good quarterback. I think they keep him. Kyler Murray is an absolute spark plug. I think he's also going to be in the MVP conversation next season. The Cardinals are going to start him. The Rams just traded for Stafford. I think the Rams are going to win the division next season and make a run at the Super Bowl. I don't know whether they'll make it, but they will make a run because Stafford is an excellent quarterback. And San Francisco, I think San Fran keeps Jimmy Garoppolo. Garoppolo gets a lot of unnecessary hate. The guy's 24-8 as a starter. The only season he's been fully healthy, he had 101 passer rating, threw twice as many touchdowns as he did interceptions, and made the Super Bowl. Yes, he missed that big throw that could have won San Fran the sixth Super Bowl in franchise history to Emmanuel Sanders, but I still believe it's not enough reason to kind of throw him away. Because I mean, if you do throw him away, there is a dog by the name of Bill Belichick who will come and snap him up and start the next dynasty of the Patriots. So I don't think it's a wise call to throw Jimmy Garoppolo away. I think they keep him. I think they should keep him. And now let's look at the AFC South. So this, I mean, this the AFC and the NFC South have this kind of I think they have the most interesting situation, and it's one situation, but to both divisions. So let's look at the other teams. So I think the AFC South, the Tennessee Titans keep Ryan Tannehill, who's played really well the last two seasons. Indy just traded for Carson Wentz. I think he's going to be back to his best since he's been reunited with Frank Reich and has a great team around him. Jacksonville will draft Trevor Lawrence with the number one pick, and they might be great for the next 10 to 15 years. And I'll get to Houston in a second. The NFC South is kind of a weird thing. So Tampa Bay has Tom Brady. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer there. New Orleans doesn't have a quarterback. I mean, Drew Brees hasn't announced that he's retiring. I think if he doesn't retire, he comes back and starts. I think he should retire. I don't think his arm. I don't think he has it anymore. He has this innate ability to read defenses, which is incredible. But I still don't think that he can be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I think Jameis Winston takes over the job. I think he'll do well with Sean Payton as the play caller. I think he'll do better than most people expect. Atlanta has the number 4 pick in the draft. I think Matt Ryan is going to be the day one starter, but I think they also picked the number 2 quarterback in this draft. They have the number 4 pick. I think they take Zach Wilson, some people are arguing that Zach Wilson is the number 1 quarterback in the draft, which I don't think is fair. I think it's Trevor Lawrence by and far, but that shows you how highly Zach Wilson is thought of. I think he's going to be a very good player in the future. I think his having him sit behind Matt Ryan for a season or two is only going to help. We've seen so many players being thrown in too early, a la Andrew Luck, who could have sat behind Peyton Manning for a year or two, which the Indianapolis Colts made a mistake there. You had, for example, even Tua last season. I mean, I think he should have sat behind Ryan Fitzpatrick for longer. Fitty Pat was playing really well. So I think he sits behind Ryan for a season or two, and I think he becomes a really good quarterback for the Falcons in the future. And now we come to kind of the most interesting quarterback situation. And I have 5 minutes to talk about it, which is great. Deshaun Watson. And the two teams I think that this trade are going is going to happen between the Houston Texans, obviously, who have Deshaun Watson, and the Carolina Panthers, who I think are going to get Deshaun Watson. Now, the Houston Texans have come out and said that, you know, we're not trading Deshaun Watson. Like it's not happening. We're going to find a way to make it work. I think it's irreparable. I think the damage that, you know, Jack Easterby, who was a chaplain in New England, he was a prayer, like like he led prayers and he was like kind of a life coach in New England, and somehow he ended up as the de facto general manager of the Houston Texans. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, this, how did he become a player personnel executive from being a life coach? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why is he scouting players? Why is he picking players and making trades? I guess even you, maybe Bill, this we look back at Bill O'Brien as this kind of this guy that traded away DeAndre Hopkins. Maybe it wasn't his fault. Maybe it wasn't his call. You think about all the things that have been going on in Houston. Maybe Bill O'Brien was just another victim of it, and he was fired and thrown away. And then they gave this kind of they gave even more power in the organization to Jack Easterby. But there are rumors of this kind of cult building, you know, between the owner, Cal McNair, and Jack Easterby, where they kind of run the organization in this weird way. Which, I mean, we don't know whether it's true or not, but it's still not a situation where you want one of the best players in the NFL and Deshaun Watson to play. You want him to play in an organization where he can showcase his skill. And I think that organization is the Carolina Panthers. Firstly, they have the assets. They have some great assets. I mean, they have the number 7 pick in the draft, I believe. They have Christian McCaffrey. I mean, I love McCaffrey. I think McCaffrey's a top 10 player in the NBA, in the NFL. But if Deshaun Watson was available, I would trade McCaffrey for Deshaun Watson. They have a plethora of picks in the coming rounds. They have a great defense. They have a great coach in Matt Rhule. They have Joe Brady as their offensive coordinator, who's one of the brightest young minds in the NFL. They have an ambitious owner who's not shy to explore every option that he can explore, which is, I think, an essential facet that each owner needs to have in the NFL. The ability to be adventurous, to be ambitious, to want to win, which is why I hate Cincinnati's owners so much. I mean, they're just happy with like making profits and being like they don't even have a scouting department. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, I mean, I hate the Bengals owners. I mean, the people yearn to be in the position that the Bengals owners are in. And Mike Brown was handed the organization from his daddy, Paul Brown, who's one of the greatest coaches and owners of all time. He revolutionized the game. And Mike Brown is a disgrace to the NFL. He's a disgrace to the Cincinnati Bengals. He's the reason the Bengals are kind of falling apart, why Joe Burrow's career might be damaged before it's even started. Zach Taylor, why is Zach Taylor a head coach? He's done nothing. Like, he's done nothing to show us that he should be a head coach, that he deserves to still have his job. But this kind of want, they just want the stability and they want to make money. But sorry, I'm getting off topic. David Tepper, really good owner. And I think that's the perfect situation for Deshaun Watson to end up. So I think Deshaun Watson goes to the Panthers, and I think Houston gets 2 or 3 first-round picks. Maybe Christian McCaffrey, who knows? I would keep McCaffrey if I could. Perhaps a defensive player such as a Derek Brown or a Brian Burns, and maybe a receiver like DJ Moore or Robbie Anderson. And I think giving up any I think giving up any two of those players, or I think giving up any one of those players and 3 or 4 draft picks even, I think is fine. Because first round draft picks don't have that much value if they're not used well, and you don't know how the first round draft pick is going to turn out. But what you do know is Deshaun Watson is going to be a Hall of Famer, and you just don't know which team with which team it's going to happen. And you want it to be your team. And I think Carolina knows that. I think David Tepper knows that. They've been clearing cap space to kind of fit Deshaun Watson's large contract into their team. And I think they make that happen. So I think Houston ends up with the number 7, I believe it's the number 7 pick in the draft. Again, I don't think they draft a quarterback. I mean Teddy Bridgewater. Sorry, Teddy Bridgewater is going to go to the Houston Texans as part of this deal. So I think Teddy B is going to be starting there, and Bridgewater is going to be starting there. And I believe that he is an excellent bridge quarterback. He's a great personality, great leader in the locker room. And I do believe I missed one starting quarterback. I missed Washington football team, who's going to have a new name next season. I think Marcus Mariota is going to be the starting quarterback of the Washington football team. I think he's a very good quarterback. I think he was kind of done dirty in the Titans. As soon as they had a good offense, they kind of threw him away. He's going to be the starting quarterback there. He's going to do great because Washington has a really good offensive line, good weapons. They need to draft a receiver first round this year. And I think they're going to do really well with Marcus Mariota as their quarterback if they manage to get him. And I think it might cost them a second round pick. It is a bit expensive, $20 million a year, but I think he's worth it. I think he's going to have the second coming as a really good starting quarterback in the NFL. They also have Antonio Gibson, don't forget, at running back. So that's which quarterback is going to play where. Weird game, weird name, I know. But it is what. Thank you so much for tuning into the rundown today. It's been a real pleasure. I'm Dheeraj Devarajan, and I will see you next Tuesday. Goodbye.